Sports. Spoken here.
Right now, Adam Hogue, Jared Payton, Mark Carmen.
The Beat is on.
You're 100% right.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Good afternoon, 720 WGN. This is The Beat. I am Mark Carmen, joined today by Trevor Cahill of the Chicago Cubs.
We wish.
We do, Andy Mazur. Hi, Andy Mazur. Happy Labor Day weekend to you, sir.
Carm, right back at you. Good to be with you here on a Sunday, a beautiful weekend, and lots of sports to get to today.
Yeah. You're over. We can't look at each other. We can't gaze into each other's eyes.
I know. Maybe it's for the best.
Right. I guess protocol in radio is you don't say these things, but Andy's over at WGN TV. I'm in our WGN radio studios. So it's just, I feel a slight disconnect to you right now. Like right now, I'd like to give you the high five, perhaps a hug, maybe a little shoulder grab, but this is just going to have to suffice. Hearing your outstanding voice, sir.
Well, it'll just make it better the next time we see each other. We can just save it up for next time.
This is all true. So, all right. We'll keep you up to date on the Cubs and Giants. Cubs are trailing right now 2-1. John Lackey started, had a good outing, I would say. And mm-hmm. I'm assuming you were watching it. The fastball was solid. Curveball was there. I wasn't noticing. I always look when a guy's coming off the DL. How much is he twitching the shoulder? How much is he reaching the arm up to the air? How comfortable does he look? And I saw some of that, but not a ton. I thought it was a pretty good day for Lackey, which was the most important thing about today's Cub game, really.
Yeah, this is basically a rehab start. I mean, without having to go down to AAA. Their games are running low as far as numbers of games left. And I know there's a lot of folks out there who say, well, why are you pitching the guy now? I mean, you're so far ahead. The magic number is 12. Well, just for that reason. I mean, if you're going to count on this guy in the playoffs, you certainly have to get him back into game situations and game mode and stretch him out again because he's missed a couple of weeks. So I don't disagree. I love the fact that he comes out after five innings and a good feeling, kept the team in the game. And, you know, you can count on them for the playoffs now.
And the two runs that he gave up today, one of them was unearned. Mm-hmm. Jason Hayward, who's been generally awful but a lot better as of late, but has been great in the outfield, actually dropped a fly ball, which when I say dropped a fly ball, it was he had a long way to go, but he should have made the play. It's a play that he makes 99.9 times out of 100, I would say. That ended up costing the Cubs an unearned run, although the ball was hit hard, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it's not like he was, you know, if I'm the pitcher and I give up a ball hit that hard, yeah, it should have been caught, but there's that part of it as well. Overall, I get, like, I'm one of those always panic guys, Mazur, you know this.
Yes, I know.
Like, don't throw him till you absolutely have to throw him, but if this is the plan that we're going to throw you 80 some odd pitches and you're going to be in a 6-man rotation the rest of September, I mean, I think that's fair. I think that's a very solid plan by Joe Maddon and company.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, it's going to give some much needed rest to several of the starters. You know, obviously with the Lackey situation coming back from the shoulder situation, you want to, again, get him into game action and get him ready to go to face live hitters of major league caliber late in the season. But you don't overdo it. And I like the fact that, guys like Arrieta and Lester and everybody else is going to get an extra day here and there, which is so critical down the stretch here. When you have the comfort of this lead, it's much easier to do. If this was a situation where you're playing and you're leading the Cardinals by 2.5 games, I mean, all bets are off. You're going with a 5-man rotation and you're pitching your best guys every fifth day. And now you get a chance to see what a guy like Mike Montgomery might mean to a playoff roster if in fact he's going to make the playoff roster, which, you know, he probably will. Guys like Trevor Cahill, our buddy, get him in some spot starts and get him into situations again where he's pitching long term and long in games. And I think it sets up well for the postseason.
And so, okay, we're going to do a ton of Cub coming up. We'll do that a little bit after 4 o'clock. So we'll get really delve into who should start game one. I like the whole playoff roster conversation. It gets me very geeked up for what's going to be October the 7th, game one, a Friday. I'm assuming late afternoon at Wrigley Field.
More than likely.
Right? Andy and I will be doing something together and praying for the best.
Yes.
We'll talk about this later, but let me just ask it now and we'll bring it back. If they don't win the World Series, Mazur, this year, or at least get to it, will this be the biggest disappointment of your Cub career?
No. It won't be. I mean, I have to be honest, going back to my deal with 2003, being in the booth with Pat and Ron all those days and games and leading up to what we thought was going to be spectacular moments and more champagne and more Ron Santo screaming yes kind of things. That was a big, huge disappointment for me personally, just because right. I was so involved with what was going on in 03. You know, this is still – I still think this train and this plan is still a little bit ahead of where it might have been, especially even in Theo and Jed's minds, where we might be, what we might be talking about this time of year and, you know, in 2016. I think it's ahead of schedule. So, you know, I'd like to see them obviously get there. I don't know if it'll be the biggest disappointment of my lifetime, though.
Well, right, and it kind of falls into how it all comes together, yeah. right? I mean, 2003, and it's
– And 84.
84 was brutal.
It was terrible for me at 17 years old. It was just like, oh, somebody just ripped my heart out.
Yeah, I was 11, and it was a miracle that I made it to 12. that was rough, very, very rough. And I don't know why I tend to steer towards this part of the conversation with the Cubs, but that's just where I end up. Like, what's coming? And it depends. Yeah. Like, if you know, listen, they get in, obviously they're in. But if they play in the NLDS to the Dodgers and it just goes completely sideways and they get swept, which is possible because mm-hmm. baseball is a crazy game,
yes.
well, then it's not going to be the most painful. It'll just be you made it and that's nauseating. But if they're on the verge like they were in 03 mm-hmm. and something crazy happens, it might feel like the most painful. It's possible.
Yeah.
Hopefully. But the other side of it is it could be the best one. Hope that's everyone's, obviously, Cub fans' hope right now. And yeah, by the way, the White Sox are losing to Minnesota 9-5, and they're not having a very good road trip. They were up today 4-0. When we come back here, quick timeout, I want to celebrate a new beginning and some excitement that's going on in the state that I think we kind of slow played what's going on mm-hmm. in Champaign. So congratulations to ILL coming on back, 720 WGN.
You go through spring ball, training camp. You talk about, you know, improvements that you're making each day, but it's a little bit different when you don't have a preseason game to play. You know, I talk a lot about takeaways and, Norm, if you look at that turnover ratio, it kind of tells you who won the football game. But deferring and putting them, you know, getting them backed up and then getting a quick takeaway kind of set the tone for the day.
There he is, the love dove, Lovey Smith. ILL, Andy Mazur.
I.
Right? I mean, I went to Iowa. I root for Northwestern. Illinois is most definitely not in my blood, even though I live in the state. But when you beat Murray State, it's not all that exciting. But when you're Illinois and you've got a new head coach and the score's 52-3 and you've got 48,644 in Champaign wearing orange t-shirts with Lovey on the front. That's a new era, Andy Mazur. That feels like something different's going on.
Yeah, my parents both went to Illinois, so I was raised as an Illini guy. I've kind of gravitated toward Northwestern as well, just with the relationship with the radio station. But, I covered Lovey when he was with the Bears.
Right.
And there were some things I enjoyed about it, and there were some things that, really from a media standpoint, I didn't. I get the fact that the media standpoint and the fan and player standpoint are completely different. But this was a great move for a university that was struggling with an identity crisis, was struggling with its football program for sure. You get a new athletic director coming in, and you want to make a splash. I mean, Bill Cubitt, give him a lot of credit. He stabilized things, after Tim Beckman was fired, 2 weeks before the season started last year?
Long live Bill Cubitt.
Yeah, but I mean, it's the same kind of situation I look at with the Cubs.
Yep.
I'm a huge fan of Rick Renteria. I have a personal history with him. I go way back, and I think he's a great baseball man. But, looking at it objectively and seeing what Joe Maddon has done with the Cubs, Joe Maddon was the right guy, the splash guy with a little bit of history behind him, to come in and maybe, provide some stability and provide that spark for a baseball team. And the same thing with Lovey Smith and Champaign for a football program. I think it was a great move. And these players are buying in. He's got professional experience. He went to a Super Bowl. Of course these 18, 19, 20-year-old kids are going to listen to what Lovey Smith has to say, and they're going to buy in wholeheartedly.
I'm willing to take a bunch of, or I should say we. This is a team operation here. Andy mm-hmm. Wright, yeah. Thank you very much. We are willing to have Illinois fans puff out their chest right now. 312.
And they should.
Right? 312-981-7200. If you're an Illini fan and you're back excited about Illini football, feel free to just have a celebratory moment here on WGN. You can just talk about how you feel. What are you feeling today with a Lovey and a 52-3 win? He's got David Haw's a great piece in the Tribune today. I learned from that piece that the words strip, punch, yank, and takeaway surround a football on a spring, and every player must pat that ball on his way to his seat. This is what Lovey's done. This is obviously in reference or the same message that Smith had with Peanut Tillman. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he loves takeaways. We heard it in that cut that Dan Long, who's producing the program today, doing a great job, played coming back here. So they got takeaways yesterday. And the other thing that was interesting in the piece to me, Andy, was they had one training camp fight, and Lovey was very much against it, disapproving, and that was different from what it was like with Tim Beckman, who we heard a lot of horror stories about. So there's a professionalism going on. There's a respect level going on, and they have some decent talent in there, more than they've had lately, and you would think that Lovey's going to add on to that, and that's only good for the area, man. Illinois and Northwestern should be, you know, locking horns at a higher level than they have been as of late, at least on the Illini side. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's exciting if Illinois football is not what it's been for the last, what, decade? I mean, it's a long time.
It's been irrelevant. And let's call it what it is. It's been pretty much irrelevant and non-existent. You know, and what Lovie Smith brings to the table, too. I mean, you think about a recruiting process and a guy that can come into your living room and sell you on a program. Would you rather it be a guy like Lovie Smith or a guy like Bill Cubitt? Again, nothing against Cubitt, but I mean, they're it's on a different level. And these kids that are coming into this program can now be filled with the idea of, listen, this guy knows what it takes to get to the pros.
Right.
He's going to design his offense and his defense to make it better for these guys on the next level and help them get there with the strips and the takeaways and the peanut punch. And he can also call upon guys like Peanut Tillman and Brian Urlacher, who have made appearances at practices. I mean, this is a resource that not a lot of programs have access to during the year, especially, I mean, in the state. I'm sure Alabama and LSU and those guys have access to a lot of pros.
Right.
But, I mean, these are guys that are near and dear to a lot of these kids' hearts that grew up in this area that are going to Champaign.
Right. And if I'm someone who's considering Illinois and I want to play professional football, well, you're looking at a guy who's got a ton of relationships within the game. Hey, you should check out my linebacker. If he doesn't get drafted, you should at least make him, put him on your free agent watch list here, bring him into camp. Like something along those lines.
Yeah.
You know, that makes a difference. Season tickets in Illinois up 2,200 from last year. They're around 30,000. They were expecting 45,000 at the game yesterday. They ended up with 48. And you've got the other side of it, by the way, is the Chicago Bears side. 19, and I wasn't a huge Lovey guy,
mm-hmm.
okay?
And
right, but the bottom line is they're 19-29 since he left. He won 10 games his last year, and they've gone backwards. There's no other way to put it,
yeah.
Right?
I agree with you. They have, and you know, this is going to be something for Lovey Smith, too, to breathe another breath of fresh air through him, you know, being able to go down there and impart this message on guys that are going to be able to, you know, understand everything that he's trying to do down there. But you're right. I think the Bears have taken a couple of steps backwards. I think it's a necessary evil to kind of get to where they want to get. You know, sometimes you talk about that two steps backwards before you can take the two steps forward to even the slate and then move ahead. But, you know, Lovey was certainly a successful coach with the Bears, and guys just loved him.
9,000 more people than last year's home opener versus Kent State. The most non-conference at a home game that they've had since 2013. Look at these Illini fans just going nuts.
Love it.
Just getting wild for Lovey Dovey. Last time Lovey Smith coached in college was 1995. He was the Ohio State Buckeye defensive back coach when the Rose Bowl was being attended by Northwestern. Should have won it.
Yeah.
Should have beat USC.
Gee, Sean.
312-981-7200. We got Sylvester, who apparently is not impressed with the win over Murray State. What's up, Sylvester?
If they beat Murray State in basketball, I'd be impressed. Got to take a cold bucket of water and put it over all the Lovey Smith fans here. Wasn't Lovey the guy who hired all the absolutely pitiful offensive coordinators for the Bears?
Yeah, but this is Illinois football, man. You got Tim Beckman and company, Forget about offensive coordinators. This is ILL. This is an upgrade, Sylvester.
Wasn't Lovey the one who decided that Ron Rivera didn't know what he was doing and fired Ron Rivera?
Great point. Solid point.
And you're telling me college kids now?
Oh, we lost Sylvester. He's
right. Sylvester's right to an extent. You know, this. You know, you heard in the cut that we played a few moments ago about how there's no preseason games, you know, for Lovey to get used to. You know, with you have four preseason games in the NFL, which is four too many as far as a lot of people are concerned. But this was like a preseason game, and this is what you're supposed to do when you're coming into a new situation. You're supposed to schedule the quote unquote cream puffs early to get yourself ready for Big Ten play. So I mean, it's hard to argue with that. But I do agree that you can't be celebrating a Rose Bowl or a bowl appearance right now after one win over Murray State.
Yeah, but right.
It's in the right direction. It's trending in the right direction.
And that's all fair. But the bottom line is they had one game against Murray State. You want to see them kill them. And they did.
And they did. Mission accomplished.
Now they got Carolina, number 22 in the country, coming in next Saturday. That's a different animal.
Yeah, that'll be a different animal. That will, you know, you'll find out exactly, you know, how Lovey is able to temper the mood in the locker room and how long he'll allow guys to celebrate victories. And that'll be a key thing to going into next Saturday's game against a ranked opponent. So we're going to keep an eye on it.
They're also playing Western Michigan the following week.
They looked really good yesterday. I was out at the game. They looked really good. And I tell you what, Northwestern just had a hard time stopping their offense, the Broncos' offense. It's difficult when your opponent is converting, 7 of 19 third down conversions, and most of them were in critical spots in the game where you really just needed to stop to get off the field.
Third and 17, Zach Farrell scrambles for 18 yards, yeah. The Bronco quarterback. That was a rough day for Northwestern, a rough day for Dave Ennett, rough day for this radio station as a whole, Andy Mazur.
Absolutely.
But
there is another game coming up.
There is another game. If you're just Cats lost 22-21,
and a weird play at the end too.
Right. I mean, Thorson fumbling at the goal line, and I think that the officials actually got the call wrong. It should have been a touchdown for the Cats. But regardless, it should not. You would think it should not have been that close. But Western Michigan's one of the favorites in the MAC, mm-hmm. and there's that. And congrats to PJ Fleck. It's a huge win for him, and we'll see how the Cats bounce back. But they've lost bad non-conference games before and have come on back. Clayton Thorson had a decent day but can be better and certainly can't be fumbling at the goal line with under 3 minutes to go when you're down a point. That was awful. And then they got Duke, and then it's Nebraska at home on the 24th, a night game at Ryan Field as they move into Big Ten play. So we'll see. The Fear the Bird got a victory yesterday too. Your Redbirds, Andy Mazur.
Not my Redbirds.
I know, you're a Bradley guy. But
even my football team is undefeated since 1972.
Oh, they haven't had football since 72?
Irrelevant. We're undefeated.
I give you credit. That you hold yourself to that.
You got it.
All right, 3:30 news time. Let's do that. Coming on back, the Chicago Bears have a new player. He's an offensive lineman, and he has a very interesting... How should I put this?
Clothing-like.
Fashion sense.
Yeah, fashion. It's a questionable fashion sense, but he really sticks to his guns.
WGN. Happy Labor Day weekend to you. Happy Sunday. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Andy Mazur. With you till 6 o'clock tonight. Brian Noonan taking over the mic at that point. 2-1. Giants still leading the Cubs over at Wrigley. What's the inning, Andy Mazur? Do you got that in front of you?
Bottom seven.
Interesting. Okay. It's nail-biting time over at Wrigley Field. We'll do a bunch of Cubs coming up after 4 o'clock. Interesting move by the Chicago Bears as they claim center Eric Kush off of waivers from the LA Rams. Now, that doesn't sound very interesting, but it's extremely interesting when you get into the fashion sense of Eric Kush, who was on Hard Knocks back in a former, when he was a backup center for the Rams, and we're going to play this sound for you. Eric Kush loves to wear tank tops.
Most important part about training camp, tank tops. I got some nice like going out tank tops. So these are like a workout tank. This is like a, you know, not too much nice tank top. Like I'm trying to show off the arms, but I'm not trying to be, you know, too much about it. Here's another nice tank. You know, not too much. You gotta have the classic Gold's Gym tank. You know, I gotta make a trip to Gold's Gym. And then here's one of my favorite tanks. This is for those fat arm American Friday days, you know? You just throw the tank out and just rip it out for America. Then you got your classic stringer tanks in a nice old school yellow. Got some blues. My wife picked this shirt out for me. It's one of my few shirts with sleeves. And it's like a 3/4 sleeve, so it really, you know, it's really pushing it for me on sleeves.
Now, just to recap.
That's on this year's episodes, too.
Yeah. I mean, this is, he's got a going out tank.
Yeah.
He's got a show off the arm tank, the fat arm American tank. He's got a not show off the arm tank.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the Gold Gym tank.
The obligatory one, right?
Right. And he's got the stringer tank. Okay.
Yeah.
We need help here.
He actually had some made up this year for his teammates. He went to this is in the show. He went to a store and designed two of his own, very Rams intensive. I wonder if he'll end up doing the same thing for his Bears teammates, although it'll be a little more difficult to wear tank tops around Chicago, say, in November and December than it would in L.A.
I wonder if they just cut him simply for the fact that he wears too many tank tops and it's just a bad look. And so, okay, I mean, I'm 5'10", 170-odd pounds. The last time I've lifted a weight was high school gym class.
Mm-hmm.
I do an amazing job in a downward dog yoga, and I like to, you know, act like I have some muscle here, do a push-up every now and then, especially mid-show, just to keep the energy flowing, that type of thing. But I literally would never wear a tank top. Ever.
Yeah.
Unless I was on a basketball team, but I got cut so many times I didn't have to worry about that.
See, if I was on a basketball team, I'd be one of the guys that wears the undershirt underneath the tank top. Just because of the fact that the sun doesn't shine mainly on my shoulders, kind of thing. I mean, when I'm playing golf, and that's pretty much how I get my sun these days. Of course, being watchful of skin cancer and putting sunscreen on.
Right.
But you know, the sun doesn't shine on my shoulders, so it'd be a rather pale type of gaudy, unfortunate look for anybody else to see.
312-981-7200. I really would like to hear, not to discriminate here and have a gender bias, but I really like to hear from women. Like, does a dude in a tank top, does that do something for you? The going out tank top, like, let's say you're going, it's a beautiful summer day like today, and you go to any outdoor bar establishment and some dude is sitting there with a tank top and he's got the guns blazing. Are you more likely to talk to that guy? Ooh, I like those muscles. Like, is that a good look? Because if it is, like, I probably won't have the dedication to get this done, but I at least would be slightly more motivated.
Yeah, it would be a shame to hear that that's the going rate, because I'm in your boat there.
Right, but I mean, maybe I would dial it up.
Yeah, I know I wouldn't, so it's going to be very depressing to hear if that's the case.
Mike Jacobson texted me, "You're not 5'10". Yes, I am. Yes, I am, Jackal. Fine, I'm 5'9¾".
He's listed at 6'2 in the WGN program.
Yeah, I mean, it is. If you want to be super accurate, I'm like 5'9⅔". Okay. I get 5'10", buddy. With shoes on, I'm almost pushing 5'11".
Nice.
So, I mean, I have, like, you know, an old school Jordan tank, which I would like to wear, but I would never wear it. I just can't. You can't pull that off. I wouldn't wear it, like, maybe I would wear it, like, over a long sleeve. Maybe, but I've never even done that.
No, that's not a good look, though. I mean, it's a good look on the basketball court, you know, and that's, you know, within the team uniform kind of a thing.
I mean, Kush is just rocking tank tops.
He's got the arms to kind of carry it off. I mean, he's big.
He is a big
dude. He's a big dude with a good attitude.
773 texting in, dudes in tanks, ew.
Like that.
I mean, that guy, see, that's how, I mean, that's how I feel about it. But maybe there's, like, a certain confidence that if you just, you know you're big, you know you've put in the work, you've spent the time in the weight room, you've gotten yourself a nice maybe what is that sprayed on tan look? Mm-hmm, you got to have a sprayed on tan look, right?
Right. You have to have the even tan.
What about the V-neck shirt? Like a lot of Blackhawks go V-neck, sir. I think a Nicholas Hjalmarsson wears a V-neck. He loves it. A Marcus Kruger, the Swedes love a V-neck.
Yeah, I think, you have to have a certain body build to carry that off. Now, when I wear a V-neck, it's usually under a dress shirt as an undershirt. And that's about it.
We might have to sex you up, Mazur.
Yeah, it's the old dog, new trick thing. Yeah, good luck.
Well, I mean...
I need some fashion advice, though. I do.
I'm working on training. And then that's the other thing, too. What happens if you're a hairy chest guy? Does that?
Yeah, that's part of my problem too.
I mean, does that make the tank top look better? 312-981-7200. We need help here. I mean, we're two 40-year-old dudes here, both single, mm-hmm. Significant issues. Let's be honest. We're working on it and all, but
But after watching 40-year-old virgin, there's no chance in where that I'd ever get that chest waxed.
That's
not a chance.
I felt uncomfortable with that movie being tied to me and you right now, but that's okay. Called Kelly's texting in the 708, says, call Dina. I don't know who Dina is.
Okay.
Dan, do you know who Dina is?
Can't say that I do, no.
I mean, I don't know Dina. That's not particularly helpful.
I don't know Dina either.
Dina may be into tank tops, though, from what it sounds like.
I mean, I think you're trying to help, and I appreciate that, but that's not going to get it done. Kush has got the going out tank would be my only look. Like, I'm not going to go into the gym, rock a tank, and then lift 10-pound weights. You know, do a nice curl.
Yeah. No, I agree with you.
Because, I got to keep that flexibility.
I agree with you.
Carr is texting in, no tank tops. Go with the V-neck for sure. Sexier with the hair. Thank you, Carr.
Okay.
My guy in the 773, the Swedish team are all still a bunch of cowards. You can't get over Hope Solo. We're getting this text every show. Here's another question.
Mm-hmm.
If your new center, and by the way, Josh Sitton, who was cut by the Green Bay Packers, mm-hmm. surprisingly, former Pro Bowler, meeting with the Bears today. So the Bears are still significantly reworking their offensive line, which they definitely need to do. Not the position you want to be in right now, but that's all going on. And Sitton could sort of, you would think, would be a guy they would look strongly at. So they are meeting today. But for the Bears, maybe they look at a guy who does rock the tank top so comfortably as somebody who brings a toughness to the locker room that perhaps they're looking for. Like, that's the conversation that Ryan Pace and John Fox had. Dude, look at this guy. He's comfortable in the tank top. You telling me we don't need some of that? I mean, that might have helped.
You know, in all seriousness, with this pickup, obviously center is a big issue with Grassu going down for the year early on in camp and things of that nature, and trying to move guys around to positions that they're not comfortable in. And we kind of saw what happened with Kyle Long last year in a position he wasn't very comfortable with. Now he gets rewarded with an extension. Hopefully that means he's going to be ready to go for week one against the Texans. But, you know, certainly a guy that knows how to play center and has been around. He's with the Chiefs before that. He's now, you know, with the Rams. So, I mean, there's some NFL experience in those tank tops, and you hope that that he's a guy that can come in and make an impact.
Right. Well, they certainly need it. 773's texting in, Andy. I think it's cool you guys just admitted that you're virgins. No big deal. I don't think we did that,
I
but
don't think so
we danced real close to it, and I'm uncomfortable. 779, sorry, don't care much about shirts, but keep your feet covered in public. That's another thing.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that one.
See, but you should be allowed to be wear a flip-flop. Flip-flop in the summer at a bar.
But see, I have the same problem with the fact that there's not a lot of sun that gets on those, you know.
You're worried about
on the dogs there, you know.
Yeah, but you're worried about someone's going to look at your feet and think your feet are pale. And
well, no, it's me. I can't, you know, I have a little bit of sense of pride. Come on.
You should have pride in your overly whiteness.
Yeah, well, it's you know, sometimes it's, you know, you look unhealthy.
Sue B. in Glenview, add a Speedo to the tank top and you got yourself a look. Not a good one, though. Thank you, Sue. The Speedo look is super bold. Even at the gym, for guys who are going for your actual normal swim workout, when you rock up there in the Speedo and a goggle, I always just think that's a little bold for me.
Yeah.
I'm still going with a more relaxed short if I'm going swimming at the workout.
That's a whole lot of confidence.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and you're going in the pool.
Yeah.
you must be living well. Let's see. After a certain age, tank tops for guys, no V-necks, have at it. Hold on a second. After a certain age, tank tops for guys, no. Okay, no. Okay, I get it. So, like, if you're 10, you can wear a tank top.
Yeah, I think you see kids at day camp wearing them all the time. And I even see kids, you know, when they go to day games at Wrigley Field, they're wearing them.
Yeah, I don't think I was ever allowed to wear a tank top as a young Mark Harmon.
Yeah, I think I did at sports summer camp.
Where'd you go to sports summer camp?
In the Burbs, yeah. Jay's summer adventure camp for a while, and then Banner Day Camp for a while.
Banner Day Camp. Yeah. It's a legendary establishment.
Yes.
That, Tamarack, Kelly's Camp.
You got it.
Kawamba.
Mm-hmm.
That was more of a more intricate North Shore mm-hmm. establishment.
Yeah. So I think I rocked a tank top or two with sports logos on it. But that was back when I didn't know any better. I was 9 years old.
Well, we're in a universal text line situation here of nobody supporting the new Bears center. So if you could just podcast this segment, Dan Long, and send it to the Bears and tell them to cut Eric Kush, that's the move. It's a public service announcement from 720 WEGN. And the dude's, he's just a little too tank toppy. We're not, you know, this is a class organization, Andy.
Yeah, I know. But I tell you what, if you saw the show, saw Hard Knocks, and saw the T-shirt or the tank top that he designed, he's got a good eye for that kind of stuff. And, you know, I'd like to see what the design might be for the Bears.
Okay. Well, I like you coming at this with an open heart.
Yeah, absolutely. If he wears a tank top underneath his shoulder pads and it makes him block guys and it makes him snap,
right.
Well, I'm all for it.
Right. I mean, I guess on the football field, this really doesn't have anything to do with anything. But I actually want to get Eric Kush on the show. New
looks like a guy that you'd just like to go out and have a beer with.
Right? Hang with the Kush, talk tank top.
Yep.
NFL.
Can we get some beat tank tops made?
Ooh.
There you go.
Reach
Ooh.
Out.
Ooh. There you go. Dan Long's always
that's
thinking.
That's a great idea. Beat WGN tank tops, and how about we put his name on the back? Kush.
Yeah. There you go.
We can get him a variety. Like, hey, this is your going out tank. This is your Gold's Gym tank.
Maximum three-quarter sleeves.
Get
a little V-neck action, too.
Get Sarah Thiemann on the horn right now. Jimmy DeCastro and whoever else you need to talk to. Let's go. All right, quick. We'll move on from the tank tops, even though I really kind of want to talk tank tops the rest of the show. I put out my dream yesterday, Andy. I don't think you were listening. So I'm assuming that you have a life and we're not tuned in when I put out there that I will be trying out to be a U.S. Open ball boy in 2017.
Mm-hmm. You want to be Kramer?
I do. I really, really, really do. So coming back here, there was a development today that
really
it's not making me reconsider.
Okay,
but it does show the difficulty of the job. So that is straight ahead.
All right.
All right, 720 WGN. I'm Mark Harmon. He's Andy Mazur. Happy Sunday to you. Mazur, is there any dreams in your life that you are still holding as something you want to do?
That's an interesting one. I'd love to get back in a big league booth. I'll tell you that right now.
Right, and I am rooting for you, young man.
Yeah.
But you did get to live that dream.
Oh, absolutely. No.
And I'm not saying hey, you deserve to live it again, man. Mm-hmm. But you got to do it. Like, so this would be something that you've never gotten to do.
Wow, that's interesting. I'd have to think about that real quick here.
So take your time.
Okay.
So, you know, because I wanted to be a professional athlete, didn't perhaps have the discipline or the talent to get me there. And then I was thinking, you know, how could I get there without being a professional athlete and just being on that court?
Mm-hmm.
And so then I was like, well, maybe I could be an NBA ref. But by the time that thought came into my mind, I was like well into my 30s,
yeah.
And I'm old for that. So I go to the U.S. Open last week, talked about this yesterday. A little bit redundant for those who are listening. But I go to the U.S. Open, and I see the ball boys out there, and some of them are right in my age range. And they're running around. They're firing balls from one end to the other. They're dealing with the towel and the players. I'm like, I would love to do it. Absolutely would love to do it. And they have tryouts every year. June 23rd, 2016 was this year's tryout. So June 23rd, 2017, or whatever day it is, I am going to be in New York, and I'm in full training to make this happen next year. And I'm just going to give it my best, Andy. You know, win or lose, rain or shine, You got to be able to throw the ball from one end of the court to the other accurately. You got to have the speed. And there's a couple other qualifications in there, all of which I can do. But, you know, it's going to be a very tough competition, right?
Absolutely. And just don't knock down any players.
Right. And you get, exactly. And I saw that actually happen. The ball boy sprinting to get to where he had to go into next just ran right into Marco Bagdidis, who lost today to Gael Monfils. Which, by the way, people are probably dying for a U.S. Open update right now, aren't they?
I know you are.
I should have updated this. That's a terrible job.
It's okay.
We'll do that in a second. But so right, you can't crash into people.
Right. And you can't go retrieve a ball that's actually been called in.
Right. Right. And the other thing is like you don't want to be noticed. That's
correct.
So
you're like an offensive lineman.
Exactly. So you got to get the ball back quickly, but you also there's a way that you should be really, really silent about it. On the court today, Jack Sock was the last American male player in the tournament. He lost to Joe Willisanga in four sets. People might want to know that. And Rafa Nadal is in the third set with Luca Pui, who they love calling him. They love Luca out there, Andy. Luca. But I'm sure they're rooting for Rafa today because, you know, he's Rafa. And my guy, Gael Monfils. Down Marco Bagdatis into the quarters, first guy there earlier today, and that is who I'm picking to win the tournament. You heard it here first. Monfils is going to get his first Grand Slam this year.
The 10th seed.
The 10th seed, baby. Love it. So
pretty impressive.
So this is what happens at the U.S. Open, though, that puts my life in danger. Grigor Dimitrov, who's the 22 seed, he was lining up to serve, and whoever the returner was, can't quite tell by this video, he lets the ball go by him, and it drills the ball boy behind him right where you don't want it if you're a guy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm putting myself in harm's way here, Mazur.
Yeah, those are 100 and so mile-an-hour serves.
Right. I mean, Monfils, who I just named, he was serving 130 today. Mm-hmm. Dimitrov's got a monster. 120, 130, maybe even touches, I think the fastest serve of the tournaments is the low 140s. Mm. I mean, that would hurt.
Yeah, that would hurt a lot.
Right? But I'm willing to put myself there.
You know, I wish you the best. I mean, I think everybody should, at least, if you've got a dream, you should go after it. No matter how silly it might sound to somebody else.
Right.
It's near and dear to your heart. I think you go. I'm in full support of you.
I mean, I would rather play, but I think that's off the table at this point. So how do I get on that court? How do I get to run out there?
That's how you do it.
This is about the only way, unless I'm going to go, you know, leap over the wall and get arrested. And I don't think that's a good move for me at this point in my career.
Yeah.
Do you think the station will support me in this?
You know, I don't know about the entirety of the radio station, but you've got one backer in me right here.
Oh, that's all I need.
Yeah.
That's all I need.
I'll see what I can do for you.
I think Dave Bennett's going to give me kind of the sideways glance on this one, right?
Well, I mean, you know, you get a lot of those, so you should be used to those, not just from Dave. So I think that you should take what you can get in this situation, and, you know, you got to focus. There's a lot of discipline, as you said. It's almost like being a tennis player. You got to train. You got to be ready to go.
You think Cochran will support me? I need some support here, maybe.
I think he will.
Yeah?
I think he will.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bill and Wendy? I think they're...
Bill, definitely. I mean, Bill's the tennis guy.
Wendy might give me a talk. Like, this is not realistic.
Yeah. She would try to sit you down probably and, you know, be motherly to you and tell you that, listen, come on, you're being an idiot here.
Ro,
I think, would support you.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I need support here.
I think Anna would support you, too.
Okay, good. Yeah. Ro and Anna. All right. Yeah. Justin?
Justin might, yeah. I think that'd be a nice little thing for his show, too. You could be maybe even, later at night, be live at the U.S. Open.
Live at the Open?
Yeah.
Did you see that? That was speaking of live at the Open. One of the players that I mentioned, Bagdatis, he was. You can't go to your phone when you're on a changeover.
Yeah, how about that?
The guy whipped out his phone. Look at, I mean, you can't do that.
No,
Marco.
Yeah, that's kind of. I mean, but unless there was something pressing that he needed to check a text message something. You know,
the dude was losing. He was losing this. ESPN actually has the audio of this one. We pulled it for him. Bagdatis going to his phone on a changeover.
Ah, these kids and their technology, put down the phone. We'll show you exactly what we mean. This is a moment ago, Marcus Bagdatis. Darren, what's in the hand?
Well, that's his mobile phone, and that's a big no-no. As far as tennis is concerned, the code violation there given to Marcus because he can be getting text messages or instruction from his coaches. He did come to the chair umpire and say that he was just checking the time.
Checking the time?
There's clocks all around the place.
Who cares? And who cares what time it is? The time is you're getting your ass kicked.
I like that it's a court violation, too.
That is a court violation.
And it's a mobile phone. I like that, too.
Do we have the Monfils audio, too, Dan?
Wasn't he tying his shoe?
Yeah. Midpoint, my guy who I'm picking to win the tournament, I'm picking him to win the tournament. Balls it. He hits a ball back to Bagdatis, who was on his phone 5 minutes ago, and he put the ball, you know, super high up in the air so he could have time to tie his shoe. Hits it up in the air, goes down to tie his shoe, and then he didn't, of course, fully tie his shoe. But he's Monfils has a reputation and an accurate one for being a showman.
Mm-hmm.
These commentators, they kill me, Andy, because the problem with Monfils is that he doesn't have the focus. Look, man, he's number 10 in the world. Like there's a level of focus that dude has that 99.9 of us don't have. Now, does he have the level? Like, if you're gonna say that, like maybe he's not quite as focused as Novak Djokovic at times. Let's give this gentleman some credit on his focus. You don't get the 10 in the world just by talent, right? Enough with the attacking my guy Monfils on his focus.
Yeah.
And I respect a guy that lacks focus because I lack focus.
Yeah. Hey, it's natural. It's one of those natural abilities that we all have.
I think that you're very focused.
I tend to be focused. I tend to get focused on several things at once, which kind of drives me a little crazy at times.
No, that's okay.
But I was thinking about a dream.
Yeah.
And this has been a dream of mine for a long time. I've always wanted to be the voice of a cartoon character.
Oh my, you could do that, Mazur.
Yeah.
You legit could do that.
I've always wanted to be the voice of a cartoon character.
All right. Well, let's think about pathways to make that happen.
Okay.
We're going to do an ISAP for you.
Yeah, cuz my life is a cartoon every once in a while.
Right.
So I think it would be a natural fit.
Have you ever done an ISAP, an idealized state action plan?
No, I have not.
Okay, well, we're going to get that done for
I
you.
I like that.
Make Andy, how does Andy Mazur get from where he's at hosting the beat right now and about to do sports feed in 2 hours on CLTV and everything else that you do in the media to a cartoon voice guy? We need help. 312-981-7200. We need pathways for Mazur.
Pathways.
That's right.
Surprised you're listening to The Beat?
No, I'm not surprised at anything. I don't want to answer any questions like that.
Chicago Sports Spoken here. Tuesday. This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
I'm Mark Carmen. He's Andy Mazur. We are with you till 6 o'clock tonight. Brian Noonan taking over. Going to do our Cubs post game in a little bit here. Cubs are trailing the Giants 2-1. They're in the ninth inning. San Francisco, a potential playoff opponent. We shall see. I'm getting terrified of every potential playoff opponent. I don't know how you feel about that, Andy. Are you worried about the Dodgers? Are you worried about the Giants? Are you worried about the Cardinals?
Yeah.
Are you worried about the whoever's?
I'd feel a whole lot better if the Cardinals were not involved in the postseason, period.
Well, that's always a win.
Especially, you know, on the heels of what the Cubs did to the Cardinals last year in the division series. Clayton Kershaw's coming back. He's going to make a start for the Dodgers on Friday. Mm-hmm. So he's coming back to their rotation. And how they've been able to do what they're doing without him has been amazing under the first-year manager, Dave Roberts. The Giants, it's supposed to be their year. You know, if you believe the every-other-year theory, along with the old Brett Saberhagen theory about him pitching in even-numbered years as opposed to odd-numbered years. So, yeah, you know, I mean, it's this team, though, to me, is just so special. And I don't think that they really give any other team a thought. I think they just kind of, as we mentioned, the focus was a big word in our last hour. I think they just focus on what they do and go out and try to do it.
So, I mean, I there's certainly a confidence around this team that it's not normal.
No.
Certainly for the Cubs. And they're young. And they're seemingly not affected by the history to this point. The one guy who I kind of think is Rizzo, actually, because he's been here the longest and he experienced a ton of losing. And he's really, I mean, he has been, Bryant's the MVP, but Rizzo, well, first of all, Rizzo's been better with runners in scoring position. And if you told me right now it was the ninth inning and they were down a run and there was a runner at third and I could have Rizzo or Bryant up, I'm taking Rizzo. Who are you going with?
Yeah, I like Rizzo's approach just in general. You know, Bryant is not really a free swinger for a power guy. I think his eye, his strikeout rate is down. His walk rate is up from a year ago. So I think that gives you reason to believe that he's got a patient approach. But there's so many things to like about Rizzo and the fact that he's 27 years old and is the leader of this ball club. Just, you know, it's just something to you know, be very, very, very happy about because he's so young if you're a Cub fan. I love his approach with two strikes. You don't see these guys in the big leagues these days choke up on the bat ever.
It's true.
And Rizzo does. He understands. It's not about hitting the ball out of the ballpark at times. Sometimes, yeah, sometimes the situation calls for you to try to swing for the fences a couple of times. But generally, when he's up, it's about getting a guy in. And he does whatever it takes to do it. I'm just amazed that he's able to do that.
So I want to ask you a very important question.
All right.
You're a professional broadcaster. You've been in a major league booth, two of them,
mm-hmm.
sitting alongside Pat and Ron, and of course doing the work in San Diego. Hawk Harrelson, we can play you this audio. It's not the best audio because we're taking it off the internet, but mm-hmm. but Hawk Harrelson had a moment the other night that people are talking about with Chris Bryant and Todd Frazier. So. Pardon the not perfect audio here, but you'll get the gist if you missed it.
Chris Bryant, running for MVP. Probably get a leg over most guys over there.
You would think so.
Well, he's got 36 home runs and 91 RBIs. And he's good to the baseball. You know, he's not the Tom Frazier defensive.
There's no one there out of state of the air.
Yeah, but I'm talking about these two.
Yeah, so, okay.
Well, he's got running for that MVP. He's got two more home runs on top. And seven more RBIs. But he's hitting 95 on one side. So the batting averages will really be skewed.
That's true.
That's the best part.
Happy birthday, by the way, Hawk, 75 years old today.
Right. And so, okay, it's a ridiculous comment. By the way, the Cubs have tied it up. Jason Hayward, a base hit up the middle. Addison Russell led off with a double, went to third on a wild pitch and just scored. So it's 2-2, bottom nine.
How about Addison Russell as Mr. Clutch?
Right. He's unbelievable. He's really unbelievable. Anything happens, we'll tell you about it right here and keep you entertained. So there's that. But so people are like killing Hawk
mm-hmm.
for his ridiculous, yeah, you know, that's correct. Todd Frazier and Chris Bryant are kind of mm-hmm. equal,
yeah,
which is an absurd comment. But like for me, and I felt the same way. Like to me, it's like the same thing with Ron Santo. People would be like, oh, he doesn't provide any substance. First of all, that's not true. Second of all, I don't care. He was the quintessential Cub fan in mm-hmm. the booth. He felt the pain just like you did. Yeah. That was the beauty of it. It was more important that you felt a connection to him. And with Hawk, if you're a Sox fan, you love it that he somehow, some way, he's going to try to twist something and pound the Cubs down because he can't stand the Cubs, and he's a Sox guy, and he's going to try to make as ridiculous of an argument as it is a move that, you know, hey, look at the work of the great Todd Frazier. I like it. I want a homer in my booth is my point here, okay. Andy.
All right, there's homer, and then there's going a little above and beyond the call of duty, so to speak. Now, I get the fact that, I, you know, a lot of broadcasters around baseball are now employees of the club.
Yep.
So, you walk a fine line, and, you know, you never want to be called a team shill. You never want to be called those kind of things because, it's a reputation you don't want to get as a broadcaster. You know, just my opinion.
Right.
There are ways to continue to even talk well about your ball club if it's 30 or 40 games under 500 as opposed to it's 30 or 40 games above 500. You got to call every game. It doesn't matter. You don't just, as Pat Hughes once told me, you don't sign up just for the wins, which is true. And you've got a broadcast to do. You've got a three-hour window to, like you say, entertain and inform and tell people what's going on with your team, what's going on in the game. Then there's that. I mean, to me, that's just ludicrous. it's very short-sighted. It's more of the fact that it's not telling the complete story. It's telling the story on a very, very, very surface level. And, it kind of shows a little bit about how, Hawk wants to approach things. And, hey, give him his due. The guy's been doing it for a long time. I'm not doing it anymore, right? So, I mean, hey, who am I to tell him what he's doing and what he shouldn't be doing? But at the same time, I mean, it's not false information because the things he brought up are accurate. I mean, it's the truth. Bryant's got 100 points higher in batting average. He only has one more home run than Frazier. He's got 7 more runs batted in. But that just tells you part of how you evaluate a most valuable player. Let's look at WAR, which is something that a lot of people will tell you now is much more important than batting average. Batting average seems to be irrelevant to the new type of game. And if at this point, going into today's game, I did a little research on this, Bryant at 7.1, which means he is valued at 7.1 wins above anybody that would replace him. Frazier is 2.6. Okay, that's a big, big span.
Right, it's ridiculous.
OPS, which is slugging and on-base percentage combined.
Yeah.
Bryant, 986 going into the game today. Frazier, 757, which is huge. I mean, you look at it, on-base percentage, Chris Bryant, 402, Todd Frazier, 298. And I get the fact that this is a stat that's probably a little more skewed because the Cubs are scoring runs and the White Sox aren't, that Bryant has 112 runs scored going into the game today and Frazier, 71. Not to mention the fact that Chris Bryant has played 5 positions this year.
No, it's a ridiculous comment.
So, I mean, I think on the surface, I think a lot of even White Sox fans knew that was just kind of, okay, well, it's something interesting. I mean, it does show you that Todd Frazier is having a productive season for the White Sox. And, Chris Bryant's on a better team right now and, doesn't have to carry the mail, so to speak. But just on the surface, it's true. But, you kind of peel the layers of the onion there, and it starts to stink a little bit.
Yeah, no, it stinks bad. But, okay, so you touched on a lot here because you get hired now for a job in Major League Baseball, really any sport.
Mm-hmm.
You best not say something critical about your own team.
No, you could be critical in other ways. I mean, there's ways to be critical of your team without being a jerk about it and without going to the extreme. I mean, listen, people are not stupid. I mean, people are not dumb. I mean, when the Cubs in 2012 and 2013 were not playing well, what are you supposed to say? Oh, that was a great play. I mean, it's 10-2. I mean, seriously, are you going to say that? No, you're not going to say that, but You're going to try to find out ways to look at some positive things because you're a broadcaster. You're trying to keep interest in a team, first of all, and trying to keep interest in a broadcast.
Right, and that's all true. But it's also when sometimes things are even painfully obvious, depending mm-hmm. on your employer. I'm not talking about anyone in particular.
Right.
But I've just heard a million different stories. You're not really at liberty. You got to sugarcoat it. Is that a fair way to putting it?
Like, well, yeah, like I said, there's ways to go about it. I mean, there's ways without being tremendously blunt, where people will get your idea and get your point. And again, you can't think that your audience is dumb. I mean, because they can see it, they can hear it, they've lived it, they understand that the team is not playing well. I mean, I have to be honest, I've never been told what to say or what not to say on a broadcast.
That's uplifting to me, yeah, to hear that. I mean, and I'm not saying that you need to go like all Bob Costas, Pedro Strop.
No. See, that's the extreme. I'm talking about, living somewhere in the middle, which is, you're still informing your audience, yet you're not insulting your audience. And you're also trying, and again, there's broadcasters that are doing Major League Baseball right now that do the pre and the post game show as well. Yeah. And you have a fine line to walk because you've got to walk into that clubhouse and be accountable for what you say. And you need these players to cooperate with you to do interviews and be available and things of that nature too. So there's a fine line you have to walk.
Right. Or you can just be Marty Brenneman and not care what anyone thinks about you.
That's true. I mean, you get to a certain point in your career where, you know, you are an, quote-unquote, untouchable kind of a guy. And Marty is one of those guys, certainly is, does a great job, a Hall of Fame broadcaster in Cincinnati. And, yeah, he gets to a point now where it's like, okay, I can say what I want to say. I've earned the right. And he has.
That's just amazing. See, and I
there's so many ways to go about it.
I treasure those guys because they you're not going to get that going forward. It's too it's too dangerous.
It's very dangerous. It's extremely, like I say, it's an extremely delicate balance between telling the truth and telling fairy tales.
And I guess my point is, go ahead, Hawk. Tell all your fairy tales. It entertains me. It's ridiculous.
He's earned the right as well as Marty to be that guy. I mean, who else do you know of that would ever stop in the middle of a broadcast, throw down the headsets, go downstairs to check on an injured player?
That was the best.
I mean, he did that with Todd Frazier.
Right. He has a man crush on Todd Frazier. That's a great point. We should have brought that up earlier. That the dude left the booth to go check on him early in the season. That was they were playing the Yankees, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and nobody does that. I mean, and
Todd Frazier's hurt.
You know,
you take over.
And that's the thing. I mean, because when I was doing Cub games, I'm sure the White Sox fans didn't agree with everything that I said, and you know, there were a lot of Cub fans that didn't agree with everything I said. But, you know, you're not going to be able to please everybody, ever. Hawk, there's just no way you're going to do it. And he's got his own unique way of doing things. He promised to Jerry Reinsdorf that if he got hired to be the TV voice of the White Sox, he was going to be a homer and it would leave no doubt.
Well,
and he's doing it.
And he's doing it. He's done it. It doesn't bother me at all. I enjoy it. I'm going to miss Hawk when he's gone. And Jason Benet is doing a great job.
He's doing a fantastic job. Yeah.
He absolutely is. But when the Hawker, one of the all-time legends in the game in the booth, as ridiculous as he gets at time goes, I will be missing the Hawk. All right, Dan Long's yelling at us. We got to take a quick timeout. And so we'll do that. Coming on back with more baseball talk at 720 WGN. Text line coming in here, 312. Kathy and Judy, your radio grandmothers, are supporting you. This is my bid to become a U.S. Open ball boy. Andy Mazur has a dream, too. He wants to be the voice of a cartoon.
Yeah, or a cartoon character, you know.
So I said that we would do an ICEP for you, which is your idealized state action plan.
All right.
How does Mazur, who... You probably have top 10 voice I've ever heard.
Oh, stop.
It's so good. Just talk to me. Just say things.
You know, Carm, it's always a pleasure to work with you here on 720 WGN Radio. And wherever I've seen you, up and down the dial.
It sounds so good. I'm not even hearing the words, even though I know I'm getting a compliment. So, let's get this going here. 312-981-7200. How does Andy Mazur become the voice of a cartoon? So here are my thoughts. Number one, I mean, you have an outstanding resume, so we're going to present that.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, what's your favorite cartoon of all time?
Boy, you know, as a kid growing up watching Speed Racer was one of my favorites of all time.
Speed Racer?
Yeah, you remember Speed Racer?
I don't remember Speed Racer. I've heard it a million times.
He drove the powerful Mach 5.
Oh, my God.
So he had Racer X, who was secretly disguised as his older brother. They rode in the Pineapple Grand Prix. He had a little Chim Chim and Sprocket, Spritle, his little buddies that used to stow away in the trunk.
Is there a theme song for Speed Racer?
Here he comes. Here comes Speed Racer. He's a demon on wheels.
Okay, we're gonna get that for
he's
you.
He's a demon, and he's going to be chasing after someone.
See, I was more of an underdog guy.
Yeah, no need to fear. Underdog is here. Big fan of the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner show, too, when I was a kid.
Okay, now you're... Okay. What kind of cartoon do you think you profile as?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think obviously with the resume, it would be more of a sporty kind of guy. There you go. Rev up that powerful Mach 5. Step on the gas. Here we go.
Here comes Speed Racer. He's a demon on wheel.
Yeah.
He's a demon and he's going to be chasing after someone.
I see. Now that's like a really cheery song.
Oh yeah.
And then you could come in and be like the voice of reason. Now that show, of course, is over.
Yeah. To tell you how far back that was when Channel 44 showed cartoons.
Now we're back to Channel 44 showing cartoons.
Yeah.
The White Sox were on 44 or 38.
They were on 44 for a while too. Yeah. And that became the on TV situation too, way back when in the day.
Okay, so that was Harry and Jimmy on 44.
Yeah, So, you know, I guess you'd have to either do one of two things with my cartoon character. Either make it in profile, which would be, you know, more sports-oriented or announcer-type-oriented, or you could go completely the other way and just, you know, be some loony kind of crazy character.
I think you could be just a nice, down-home, good kid guy, just a wholesome character.
You know, Casey Kasem was the voice of Shaggy on Scooby-Doo.
Right. Right. I actually did not know that. But yeah. Okay. So there you go. I mean, this wouldn't be unprecedented.
No. There have been guys that have done it. And to me, it would be just a blast. I think it would be just so much fun to do.
312-981-7200. Help Andy Mazur realize his dream. Dan Long, you got any ideas on how to make this happen?
Get Andy cartoon work?
Yes.
Yeah. We have to
create pathways. I'm a little bit out over my skis here. I don't know the cartoon voiceover world.
Well, a lot of those guys, you know, Casey Kasem was a big radio guy, but a lot of those guys did like game show announcing too. Mm-hmm. Can you do like Price is Right style?
Yeah, come on down. Dan Long, you're the next contestant on The Price is Right.
I love it.
That was good.
Thank you. I've been practicing for a long time.
I love The Price is Right. We have to take a quick time out. Okay. I'm going to think this through, and then we'll get you into news. Cubs are going to the bottom of the 10th, 2-2 at Wrigley. So we'll keep you up to date on that as well. 720 WGN. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Andy Mazur. Talk some Bears football with you right now with my guy. I really love Kevin Fishbane, mainly because he's such a Northwestern diehard, but he also does a great job covering the Chicago Bears. Shaw Media, the Northwest Herald, everything else that he does. He's right now. Are you looking at Hubarkish right now, Kevin Fishbane?
I'm currently looking at Anthony Rizzo on my television, to be perfectly honest with you, Carm.
But you have Hub somewhere in your head, do you not?
Hub's always omnipresent.
What's your favorite thing about Kevin, Andy?
That he's watching the Cubs and talking to us at the same time.
it's a solid answer. Hey, Josh Sitton visiting the Bears today, per Adam Schefter. That's your last tweet, Kevin Fishbane. I love you on Twitter, too. K Fishbane, FISHBAIN. You surprised the Packers cut him, and I think it makes sense that the Bears are talking to him. Let's start there.
Yeah, it was probably one of the biggest surprises yesterday. And from reading some of the things out of the Green Bay, the only explanation is essentially the Packers have very certain particulars in terms of how much they're going to pay to a certain position based on who that player is. And they decided they weren't going to pay Josh Sitton that much money to play that position anymore. So they cut him. That simple as that. And so here come the Bears, who need help on the interior offensive line. Now, I don't know if they talked to him about playing center, if they would bring him in to play guard and move Cody Whitehair to center, if they think Kyle Long is going to be out for longer than we believe. You know, a lot of different options there, but certainly a guy that would help their offensive line. I mean, right now, you look at the positions where the Bears are weakest, and you could say center would be on that list. So, you know, that Sitton could factor in that conversation.
You know, let's stay on the offense, Kevin, too, because you know now it looks as though it's going to be that two-head, maybe even three-head monster at running back with Langford, Kadeem Carey, and the young guy from Indiana, Howard. Is this enough to get the Bears to replace what they lost in Matt Forte?
You know, I think they would all be the first to tell you that they're not going to get back to that in the same way, because Matt was able to do pretty much everything himself. So it's going to look different when you look at the final numbers. You know, the Bears might finish in the same ranking in rushing that they did when Matt Forte was here, but it's going to be split up among different guys. It's going to be who has the hot hand that day. I mean, everything I saw in the last 2 months, guys, tells me that Jeremy Langford, at least the start of the season, is going to be the guy. I mean, he's going to get 20, 25 touches a game, unless he slips up at some point and they decide to try somebody else. I think you'll see Kadeem Carey potentially on third down or near the goal line. And Jordan Howard, I'm kind of curious to see when they want to start bringing him along as a change of pace guy. But I think this is Langford's backfield for now, and we'll see how long he can kind of be the bell cow.
Kevin Fishbane covering the Bears for how long now, Kevin Fishbane?
This will be season 4 on the Bears beat, Carm.
Okay, I felt like I was going to put you at 10 years. It just seems forever, but okay. you do such a thorough job that you pack more years into 1 year than anybody else could do, except for Adam Hogue, who works at the station, in case Adam Hogue's listening. I guess I got to cover my bases here.
Diplomat.
Right. So let's talk about Kyle Long and his contract extension. He's got a labrum tear, apparently. He's going to play with it. He's going to have a brace, and then he's going to have surgery. Why the deal right now?
Well, if you're Kyle Long, you might as well, if you're going to play through that and the Bears are going to offer you $30 million guaranteed, you take it because you don't know what you're going to be, you know, when the season's over in terms of your shoulder and how you're going to play.
I get that side.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, I guess, for him to play at a Pro Bowl level maybe with that. But, I mean, I'm not one to doubt Kyle Long. For the Bears' standpoint, look, they got a ton of cap space. It's only 4 years. I think they can be pretty comfortable that they know what they have in Kyle Long and that they are confident that he can play through this injury. And if surgery is the route they go, that he'll be back in 2017, ready to go at a Pro Bowl level again. I feel like there might not be a single player on this team that they can be as confident about being an important part of their plans than Kyle Long. Now, the problem with that statement is Kyle Long plays right guard. And you would like to be able to say that about a quarterback or a pass rusher, maybe a left tackle. But, you know, beggars can't be choosers. The Bears' best player for the long term is Kyle Long, so you got to lock him up when you can.
Kevin, let me ask you about just a philosophy that seems to be developing there, and tell me if this is a change with Ryan Pace and the fact that they're not spending a lot of time with guys, even that they drafted. If they think that, you know, maybe it was a mistake, they're cutting fish, they're cutting bait right now, and they're not waiting around.
Yeah, I mean, and it's way different, Andy, than the last regime, where guys would be on the field or with the roster just because they were a draft pick. And I think that last year alone, they benched maybe six guys on defense at some point in the season, which was six more than Mark Trestman benched combined in his 2 years. So these guys are, you know, they're not going to waste a lot of time. They want their guys. They want to be young. Jimmy Kemsky out of Philadelphia always ranks the rosters in terms of oldest to youngest. The Bears have moved up from 19th to 10th youngest in the league. They were the 30th in that category a couple years ago. So it's all about getting younger. It's guys that fit what John Fox, Vic Fangio, Dow Loggins, Ryan Pace want to do. And yeah, I mean, look, they're just not any concerned at all about the moves that they have to make. You know, they are the epitome of this is a business. And you know, Daniel Braverman, I guess, is the draft pick that they cut this time around. And, you know, this was a big draft class. So we'll see what happens if some of these guys, you know, struggle to perform up to their expectations. I think Hronis Grasu, if he was healthy, would have been a really interesting case study in that as a third round pick, where normally you would think, okay, now it's time for him to start. Let's see if he can play up to that level. But obviously he's on the injured reserve, so we won't see them kind of put into that situation.
Kevin Fishbane covering the Bears with us here on 720 WGN. So would you say it's fair to say that the McCaskies never wanted to get rid of Lovie Smith?
I'm not sure, Carm. George hasn't answered my calls in a while. I think that was a really interesting scenario where, when they hired Phil Emery, they put the trust in Phil Emery. And when you're in ownership and you hire a GM like that, you kind of have to, because if you don't, then you got to find a new GM.
Right.
And Phil was ready to move on from Lovie. And look, Lovie had been there for, what, 9 seasons? Mm-hmm. Obviously, they went to the Super Bowl. They had a lot of success. But, you know, they thought that there could be more with a different coach. I think George did say, I think he told the great Dan Pompey, that, you know, one of his regrets is the Bruce Arians situation, that they could have brought Bruce Arians in. But, you know, they can't look back at losing Lovie because, you know, you have to go with what your GM wants, and that Phil was the guy they were trusting at that time. I think, too, we have to remember, you know, in the NFL, I mean, at the time, Lovie was one of the longest tenured coaches in the NFL. I mean, if he was still here, he would be second to Belichick in that category, which would be amazing. And if you're going to have a guy around that long in this business, he better be taking you to the playoffs consistently. And, you know, that year just didn't work out for them.
And I'm not saying they were wrong, but I'm just pointing out that they're 19-29 since he left. And now he's at Illinois. And if he turns that program around, it's kind of in their face a little bit if they're still in the doldrums, right?
Yeah, they'll certainly notice what's going on. You know, I think they were pleased to be able to get a win over the Bucks the last couple of years when Lovey was there. Probably helped them a little bit. They'll probably try not to look at that, but keep an eye on it. I think they're pretty happy with the guy they have. It's just a question for me at this point is, you know, how long do we go? Because it was such a non-McCaskey thing to blow everything up after 2 years with Mark Trestman. So now what does that do to their patience in the long run? You know, if John, they're not expected to make the playoffs this year. Well, does that put all the pressure on next year? You know, they're paying John Fox a lot of money. How does that factor in moving forward? They love Ryan Pace. How long of a leash is he going to have? You know, how many more years, essentially, can the Bears go without making the playoffs before another move is made?
Yeah, and that's interesting, too, because, you know, they've been patient to the extreme, I think, in some cases. And this does represent a little bit of a change of, you know, philosophy within that family. Just to be able to go ahead, like you said, blow things up and then kind of hope that they made the right decisions here with a veteran coach and a young GM.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's why I'm kind of wondering, you know, where they're at now. And, you know, where, like, for example, where will it be in 2018 if they don't make the playoffs the next 2 years? And if, you know, so let's say John Fox is here for 3 seasons without making the playoffs. You know, what do they do then? You know, what's the game plan? Do they make a move at coordinator? Do they make a move at GM? So, you know, we'll see. You know, obviously the McCaskies hope they never have to be in that situation again because they hope that John Fox and Ryan Pace, even if it takes them another year, will turn the Bears into a consistent winner. But they could be tested again to try to figure that out if they're struggling. I mean, this is a young roster. And, as I said, you know, I don't think anybody's picking them to be better than 8-8 this season. So, you know, they're going to have to, have another good draft and hope that they get a lot from Kevin White and Leonard Floyd this year and make it so that puts a lot of pressure on what they can do next season.
Cubs and Giants going to the 11. Is that Phil Cuzzi behind the plate there?
It is.
I mean, he just called a strike on a pitch that was 3 feet outside to ring up Addison Russell as they move to the 11th.
I can tell you a good Phil Cuzzi story later
from my
days in San Diego.
I can't wait to hear a good Phil Cuzzi story. Hey, Kevin, how many wins? I want your prediction right now.
For the Bears?
Yep.
Carm, I haven't put it in writing, so I don't know if that counts, but I've been telling people 8-8 when they ask.
Okay.
So I'll stick with that. I mean, the McPhee thing, you know, makes it a little shaky. But here's the thing, guys. Look at their schedule, and I don't like to go based on strength of schedule, like how the teams did last year, because these teams are so different. But I tweeted this out yesterday. You look at the quarterbacks they're playing. They get Carson Wentz, in his first ever primetime game at Soldier Field in week 2.
Right.
They get Dak Prescott in Sunday Night Football the next week.
Osweiler.
They get a bad Lions team at home. You know, Osweiler and a Texans team in a little bit of transition. You get the Jaguars at home, Titans at home in the second half, the 49ers at home, Washington, at Tampa, who, you know, a team is still, you know, kind of in a development mode. And then you got Minnesota now with Sam Bradford instead of Teddy Bridgewater. So it's not like their schedule is full of world beaters. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of close games, and the question is going to be, can they win more of those close games than they lose?
Joe Maddon losing his mind pitching Aroldis Chapman for a second inning. I can't not say that right now. I apologize. Biggest strength of this team in your mind?
Biggest strength is the front seven on defense, and I think that'll be the area that people will notice the biggest difference. You know, I guess Alshon Jeffery and Kevin White, you could throw in that category too, if you just talk about the top two receivers. But I think that front seven, what they did in terms of bringing in Trevathan and Freeman and Leonard Floyd and Akeem Hicks and Jonathan Bullard, I think that front seven is so much better than it was last year. It's almost going to look like just the strongest part of the team by comparison. I think when you look around the league, in terms of how different units on this Bears team compare to the rest of the league, I think Alshon Jeffery and Kevin White could be up there in terms of one of the best receiving duos, but I can't put them there yet until I see Kevin White in game. So right now, I'll give you that front seven.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Alshon Jeffery too, because you know, much was made about the tag placed on him and the fact that he wants to be paid what he feels he's worth. But it's so hard to determine what he's worth because we haven't seen him for a full season.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, we haven't seen him. Well, I'll say this. We haven't seen him for a full season as the number one guy. We saw him for a full season as the number two, and he was phenomenal in 2013, 2014. Then 2015, when he was healthy, he was the number one guy. So this is a huge year for him, obviously, to be able to stay healthy, prove that he can be a good receiver. He's got a guy on the other side that's going to eventually attract some attention in Kevin White. So, you know, the thing with wide receivers is, and this is really going to test Ryan Pace and the McCaskey family, wide receiver money, that's a lot of money for if he puts himself, if he believes he's in the Dez Bryant, Julio Jones, A.J. Green, Demaryius Thomas category, what if he puts up numbers in that category? You know, what are they going to do with that, especially knowing Kevin White could be at that caliber one day, and they'll have to give him a new contract in a couple of years. So, you know, look, it'd be a great problem for the Bears to have if he has a great season. They got to figure out what to do there. But you're right. He obviously has got to stay on the field to even get thrown in that possibility to earn that kind of massive contract.
Kevin, great stuff. You're a great man. Don't worry about the Northwestern loss. It's only one game. Fear the bird coming in next Saturday. Turn it around with a win there and just roll. Really, I think they're only going to lose one game all season.
Carm, I'm on to basketball.
Did you get your season ticket memo?
I did get that memo.
What did you say? No.
Yeah, you mean the memo where they wanted to know if I was going to pay extra money to get season tickets to see a team that's never made the NCAA tournament?
That would be the memo, yes.
Yeah, I had some pretty strong feelings about that memo.
Yeah, I think a lot of Cat fans did. And we'd love to see them be in the tournament, and I'm keeping my tickets, but that was a shocking memo. Go Cats. I'm really excited to see Chris Collins and company this year. All right, Kevin, you're the man.
All right, take care, guys.
Kevin, see you, Kevin.
Kevin Fishbane, our guy, talking Bears football, been covering it for 4 years, and diehard Northwestern fan. It's okay, Cats. One little loss to Western Michigan, no big deal.
Yeah, Western Michigan is not one of those patsies that you open up with normally. This is a good football team.
I'm a little tired of giving PJ Fleck so much credit, but yes, it's true. They're a favorite in the MAC. All right, we got to catch up with the old spots here. Coming on back, 720 WGN. Hope you're having a great Sunday. He's Andy Mazur. I'm Mark Carmen.
Phil Cuzzy.
Yeah, this guy's... tell me your Phil... Phil Cuzzy's got home plate today at Wrigley, and he's inventing the strike zone as he goes. Yeah.
As somebody just pointed out on Twitter, Phil Cuzzy making a great case for robot umpires. July of 2011, I'm doing a game, Padres and Mariners. And... Cameron Maben, actually, it was Mike Cameron was up for the. It was Cameron Maben was up for the Padres. A 1-2 pitch was taken in the dirt, and the scoreboard went from 1-2 to 3-2. And the next pitch was ball four, supposedly ball four when it was actually only ball three. Maben takes first, steals second, goes to third on a ground out, scores the only run of the game in a 1-0 Padres win because Phil Cuzzy did not have an indicator in his hand. He wasn't keeping track of the count behind the plate. Nobody in the Mariners noticed it. Nobody on the Padres noticed it. The scoreboard operator, obviously that's not the official count. When you go to a ballpark, that is never the official count. It's the one kept on the field by the umpire or by the official scorer.
Did you know it in the booth?
We knew it in the booth because we try to keep track of everything. We thought maybe we missed a pitch, but there was no extra pitch involved in it. So once it happens, you can't protest it. And the funny thing was, I think the crew chief was Larry Vanover, came out after the game and said that Phil lost track of the count on his indicator. Now you go back and you watch the video, and the indicator is that little clicker that they have in their hand that tells you that they click it once for a strike, click it once for a ball, and it continues to update what the count actually is. You go back and look at the video, Phil Cuzzy has nothing in his hands the entire game. So they made it up.
I'm looking at him right now.
He's got one in his left hand right now.
He's got one in his
hand. He does
have
one in his left. But that didn't help on Addison Russell's at bat, where six pitches were out of the strike zone, and he called him out on strikes.
Yeah. So, okay. You want to start a movement, fire Phil Cuzzy?
No, I mean, I never like to see a guy lose a gig. I mean, but there's been enough incidents with Phil Cuzzy. You go back to the playoffs before Replay was even involving. It was a series in New York where he was right on the line and called a ball fair that was completely foul. This isn't a playoff situation. And, you know, I've always advocated that there should be a guy who is, or a gal, who is the general manager of the umpires. Players are held accountable every game, performance. It's all about performance. It's performance-based. And, you know, your GM makes moves. You go to AAA if you're not performing. You get released if you're not performing. Umpires, you know, get away with a lot of this stuff just because their union is very ironclad and very, very, very powerful. And if there was a GM of the umpires that was making decisions on a guy, then AAA who's calling a great game, who understands the strike zone and calls pitches correctly and understands the rules of the game, why should he be in AAA and this guy be in the big leagues? And it's not just Phil Cuzzy. I mean, there's others. But Phil was just the ire right now because of the story I remembered and the at-bat here with Addison Russell.
I'm shocked. You're telling me they're not reviewed all the time?
No.
That's interesting.
No. And, you know, in college basketball, officials wait sometimes an hour, sometimes an hour and a half after a game where the cross-checker, there's a national guy and a local guy that works for the NCAA that actually will grade them during a game. They will actually watch a lot of the DVD of the game after the game has ended so that they can improve on certain things and they can, you know, be graded on things. And that kind of determines what conferences they ref in.
That's how it should be.
Yeah. So
when we come back after the 5 o'clock news, maybe the worst story in sports that I've come across in the last, 2 days? I mean, I can't go too far.
Okay.
But this is an interesting one. And society, we got to do a little bit better here.
Now back to the beat.
720 WGN.
720 WGN. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Andy Mazur. You can check Andy out on TV tonight. Be doing Sports Feed alongside Josh Friedman starting at 6 o'clock. What do you got on the show tonight, Andy?
A lot of the stuff we've been talking about here tonight. Cubs-Sox highlights, of course. Bears conversation. Mark Potash is going to join us from the Sun-Times. Talk a little Bears. We got a really cool feature that they do here on the show every night, I believe. Social fodder, which is some of the best of social media and sports coming up. We'll have that, too.
There you go. 6 o'clock on CLTV. Do you have anybody guarding your condo, your apartment, wherever you live right now?
Not presently, no.
Okay, because you're on the radio, and people can hear
Correct.
That. They know you're not home. So your place could be in danger. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't, but you can certainly enlighten me.
So Nebraska had a punter by the name of Sam Fultz.
Right.
He passed away in a car crash this summer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The funeral was today. Somebody broke into the home of his brother and his car because they knew that his brother was not at home or not with his car. Greeley County Sheriff David Weeks says the burglary happened sometime after the Fultz family left home around noon to attend the game in Lincoln and before they returned home at 3 a.m. on Sunday. The thieves took items worth roughly $1,400, including a television, tools from the home, and vehicle. Sam Fultz would have been a senior at Nebraska.
What is wrong with people?
Right?
My goodness.
I mean, it's just a fascinating world.
It's almost like all civility just got flushed down the toilet somewhere.
Oh yeah, your brother died in a car crash. Got in a funeral. You're going to be in Lincoln to honor him. We're going to break into your house and into your car and steal stuff. We know you're not going to be around. We're not going to get caught. Woof.
That's.
I bring you all the positive stories.
Well, it's not even that. It just scratches the surface of the larger issues that I'm not qualified to talk about. But I just have my own thoughts that.
You're qualified to do whatever you set your mind to.
Politics and I don't get along real well.
Oh, okay.
I don't articulate very well what my thoughts are, but just in general, thinking, like I said, what happened to being nice to one another?
I don't know. Sometimes
what happened to saying hello to somebody you see on the street?
Well, we're all buried in our phones, man.
Am I like borrowing the Kathy and Judy line there about get off my lawn? I mean, is this Does this mean I'm getting older?
I think a lot of people have that feeling, right? I mean, we're all young, old, in the middle.
Yeah.
I think we all want a good hello.
I'm a friendly person. If I see someone I make eye contact with, I say, how you doing?
I'm waving everybody out the window right now.
Yeah, good.
How you all doing? There you go. You could say hello to everybody. It's okay. There you go. Waving doesn't quite work, but that's okay. I attempted, Mazur. I tried to get it going on here. Right. Say hello.
Yeah.
Be a friendly folk.
It's not a tough thing. It's a rather small world. And it could mean the world to someone else.
Don't rob somebody when they're going to a funeral for their brother.
It's unbelievable.
Come on, man. That's just flat out wrong.
Yep.
Cubs and Giants are 2-2. In the 12th at Wrigley, Justin Grimm is on, so Aroldis Chapman pitched two innings. And, Andy, you're going to have to do TV in about 15 minutes. So any problem with two innings for Aroldis Chapman? Joe Maddon, what are you doing?
It's such a fine and a catch-22 now where Joe Maddon is concerned, because you want to win as many games as you can. And Javi Baez, again, making a tremendous tag. This guy, I'm telling you, I'm getting off topic here, but this team is so much better with him in the lineup. I can't begin to articulate that enough in my opinion. I'm making a great tag on a wild throw by Wilson Contreras on an attempted stolen base.
He's phenomenal at taking the throw on the attempted steal and just swiping behind him and somehow getting a body part.
Yeah, but anyway, as you were saying, it's a fine line because you want to win games and you don't want to ever give up a game because you never know what that could entail. So, you know, on one hand, I can see why you'd want to go and throw him a couple innings because you want to win the game. But at the same time, there's a larger picture to be concerned about here, and that's the postseason. And many have said it, and the Golden State Warriors proved it. The regular season means squat. I mean, it means, okay, yeah, you might have home field advantage as long as you're around in the playoffs, but it doesn't mean anything if you're not in the playoffs.
Right.
So those are the things you have to kind of worry about getting yourself in a position and a good frame of mind to approach the postseason in the right way.
And that's what the month is for the rest of September, right?
Mm-hmm.
Keeping everybody healthy, getting everybody the requisite number of at-bats so they will be sharp and not overworking your pitching staff. So, okay, you threw Aroldis Chapman two innings.
He gave him some time off earlier. I mean, Carl Edwards the other day came in and recorded his first save.
Right.
They had that bullpen by committee game earlier in this series, so there were a couple. And I think Joe's not doing this to kind of run a guy into a ground. You don't want to do that. There's still things mechanically that guys need to work out. I mean, Chapman, as you saw in the last even today's outing and the previous outing, got a little wild. You know.
Yeah. No. It's true. It's true.
So,
He's pitched him 3 days in a row, though. He's pitched him. Mm-hmm. When he first got here, he was throwing him 1 1/3,
right.
And then Aroldis apparently went to him and said, it's not really what I'm used to doing. Mm-hmm. And then that went away. But today, I mean, he obviously wants to beat the Giants, who are very well could be a playoff opponent, and I guess set a tone for October if it comes to that. Fair. I think that's part of his mm-hmm. mindset, at least.
Yeah, give the Giants something to think about.
Right.
And he put in some work in that second inning, but the first inning he only threw like a handful of pitches,
yeah.
I think.
He was good.
That's
he,
true.
He was good. I mean, there was a sequence there where the home plate umpire and also Wilson Contreras were getting beaten up a little bit just because he was missing so badly. I mean, you miss with 102 miles an hour, it hurts.
Yeah, it does.
I think we should get T-shirts like that.
102, don't feel good.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I know you want to talk about the 40-man roster and how the Cubs go through that. So we'll do that coming right back here. Baseball season, as you're hearing right now, and as you know, is in full swing, and the Chicago Tribune has put together the ultimate crosstown showdown. Head to chicagotribune.com/greatestsports and vote for Chicago's greatest baseball players of all time. It's presented by WinTrust. It's 720 WGN. Hope you're having a great Sunday. Rafael Nadal in the fourth set with a Luca Pui down 2-1. Get that game. I want the Cubs to win, and then we can switch over to the tennis. That's what I need in my life right now, Andy Mason.
It's all right.
All right, so you told me that you want to talk about the 40-man roster. What is? Yeah. Let me hear your issue with the 40-man roster.
Well, not the 40-man roster in and of itself, in general. I mean, I like the fact you can protect guys that you're not going to have on your active 25-man roster. But what I have an issue with is
let's rewind for those who don't know. Explain what the 40-man versus the 25-man is.
So 40-man are the 40 guys in your roster that you have right to protect. They're not susceptible to what they call the Rule 5 draft, which is a situation where teams at the end of basically the winter meetings, they can select some of your guys if they're not protected. They can take them. But the caveat there is that player has to be on your major league roster the entire season, or he has to be offered back to his original team.
Right.
So Hector Rondon was a Rule 5 guy from Cleveland. The Indians did not protect him, and the Cubs picked him up. He was on their active roster the entire year, the first year, and now he's obviously a very key man in the bullpen.
And feeling better, by the way, does not want to go to the minors, should be activated sometime this week, maybe as early as tomorrow. Hector Rondon, welcome back.
That would be a good thing to have. So, you know, you have a 25-man roster. The only time that it changes during the first 5 months of the season is a day-night doubleheader situation where you're allowed to bring up a 26th player just to have an extra whatever to play in a day-night doubleheader.
Theory being most likely a reliever who can help you get through the 2 days.
Correct.
Two games. Right.
So what baseball does in September after September 1st is allows the regular roster, the active roster, to expand to as many as 40, which to me just seems like a recipe for disaster. I actually could see it better being served in April as opposed to it being served in September. And the reason why is you've got a lot of off days. Yeah, I understand that. But you're also pitching in some weather that is not the best during that year. You're still trying to get a handle on some guys on your roster. And maybe if you have a 30-man roster in say, April, I could probably get on board with that more than I could get on board with as many as 40 in September. It just doesn't make a competitive balance because you're not required to get to 40. Certain teams only called up 3 or 4 extra guys. Other teams, like the Giants, called up a ton of extra left-handed pitching that you have to understand, you have to get ready for, you have to scout. And in a game like this, that's going into the 12th inning right now, it probably helps the Giants more than it helps the Cubs, who only added 3 or 4 guys. It bogs things down. I don't like when sports, and the NHL is kind of guilty of this too with the overtime rule in the regular season as opposed to the postseason where the game can go on forever, which I like. I don't see why you couldn't play an overtime and you have a tie in hockey, but I digress. I just don't like when they change the rules. I would be more in favor of, say, a 30-man active roster with 25 players dressing.
Well, and I think what you're saying makes a whole lot of sense. You should have set a strict number, and I guess it's because most teams are not going to go to 40.
No.
So it's always going to be different. While the Giants have called up X amount and the Cubs have called up something less or more, and whoever you're playing along the way, mm-hmm. Brewers tomorrow, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. And the Brewers are in the same case. They're going to be trotting guys out there, I'm sure, that they're trying to get a look at, and I get it. I mean, I understand that. The Brewers are going nowhere. They've been eliminated already, and they've had a terrible season. You want to get a look at what you have in competitive situations, but it just doesn't seem right to have that go on during a pennant race. It just doesn't seem like it's competitively fair. And yeah, I know there are going to be people who say, hey, the Cubs can bring up anybody they want. I get it, but the Cubs are not trying to look at people. The Cubs are trying to get ready for a postseason situation, and it's weird to think that this could continue to happen without some uniformity. Baseball was so anxious to get 15 teams in each league to balance out the schedule, to make it, we have an interleague game every day now, which to me still doesn't make a lot of sense. But uniformity seems to be the order of the day in baseball, and this is one area that there's no uniformity in.
312-981-7200. Feel free to throw out any other problems with you have with the great game of baseball, because you're opening up a little can of worms here, which I'm enjoying.
No, I get it, and it's not a popular opinion. Obviously, they continue to do it.
I don't think it's unpopular.
Yeah, but they continue to do it, and it sounds like the big clubs that are actually in the race are crying foul because you have to scout 2 more guys. It doesn't sound like a really big deal, but when it comes right down to it, every game sometimes, not in the Cubs situation here, but look at the Giants and the Dodgers. They're battling it out now for the division and the wild card situation, where one of these games could swing whether you play one game to continue in the playoffs or you get to wait and find out who you get to play.
Well, and in a game like today where they're now moving to the bottom of the 12, Justin Grimmon, and he
gets out of the Giants had a runner on second with one out, but Grimm able to pitch out of it. So we're going to the bottom of the 12th. The more guys you have, more relievers you have in a situation like this, it is to your advantage. Mm-hmm. There's no way around it.
Yeah.
So I hear what you're saying. What about the speed of the game, Andy Mazur? Because I number one, I don't go to baseball for speed.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, I'm on both sides here.
Yeah.
I don't think you should be able to step out of the box, call your mom, and scratch your butt and have deep thoughts on every pitch. You want to take 1 foot out to look down to third base or gather yourself? Okay.
Yeah.
But other than that, stand in there, man. This is the deal.
Carm, when I went to a game the first time they had the countdown clocks in between the innings,
right?
I looked at it and said, what is going on here? And the thought of a pitch count or a pitch clock, where you have to deliver the pitch in 20 seconds. I'm more apt to be on board with that than I am to be on board with, this pace of play situation where guys are stepping out of the box, adjusting their batting gloves and whatever. There's rituals and habits that guys go through that, maybe you can penalize them for, maybe you can't. There's certain guys that are making so much money that if you find them, they don't care. They're going to do it anyway. But there was a guy, I can't remember who it was, that was pitching for the Dodgers the other day. Pedro Baez, I want to say.
Yeah, that's right. It took 17 hours.
Usain Bolt could have run four races and won all four races in the time it took this guy to throw a pitch.
Yeah, I saw Baez was trending on Twitter, and I'm like, what did Javi Baez do? And it wasn't Javi Baez. It was Pedro Baez.
It was Pedro Baez. And I was being, I kind of tweeted it out a little bit, and I've got some friends that work in the truck for the Dodgers and the production crew, and one of the guys texted me. He goes, we dread every time this guy comes into a game, whether the Dodgers are winning or losing, we know it's time to eat lunch.
Human rain delay.
It's disgusting. That part of it, that drives me crazy. But, you don't go to a baseball game, as you said, for pace of play. But I understand that, the new, we want results now. We want this. We want scoring. We want action to keep our attention. You kind of have to do it. You kind of have to go with the ebbs and flow. But I just wouldn't – I don't like to see these type of changes. Yeah, the egregious stuff, penalize the guy, fine him or whatever. Or don't call timeout. You're an umpire. You don't have to call timeout.
I mean, to me, it's not fining or penalize. It's strike one.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. If you step out and the guy's not ready to throw, let him throw.
Right. Go ahead.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you do throw and he's not in the box and it's a ball, well, then he just lucked out.
But yeah.
So they're, again, bottom 12 at Wrigley.
Yeah, Joe Nathan's on the mound for the Giants right now.
It's interesting because Joe Nathan was with the Cubs, pitched in three games, did not give up a run, ERA of 0.00. But he wasn't established, and the Cubs had a plethora in their bullpen at the time, so they had to cut him. The Giants signed him, put him in the minors, and now this is his first appearance as a San Francisco Giant, somewhat fittingly, I guess, against the Chicago Cubs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is his second go-around with the Giants, who had him and then made that awful trade for A.J. Pierzynski and sent Nathan to the Twins. And, boy, he was nothing short of spectacular, 377 career saves overall, many of them with the Twins.
That's I forgot about that part. Yeah. Wow,
that was a terrible trade.
Wow, I thought he was I would have guessed a Twin for life before he finally moved on. But
yeah.
And I was actually when the Cubs had to cut him, I got it. They had roster issues, but the guy looked pretty good to me.
Yeah, he did look good,
and he's 41 years old, so that there's that as well, and he's been injured, but he was pitching well. Mm-hmm. And that was before Strope and Rondon both went down. And the other thing with Pedro Strope, Cubs fans, he was supposed to be back somewhat sooner. Our guy's warming up in the pen, Trevor Cahill.
Warming up.
Put in Cahill. Let's go. So he's got, in addition to the knee issues, he's got a groin issue. So now we're talking about the full middle of September, maybe longer, before Strope gets back out there, which is not a big deal right now, but you do want him back on the mound, I would think, for 5-6 outings before the playoffs,
just
at least.
Just to get right, because the minor league seasons are over by that point, so you can't do minor league rehab. So
and who do you pitch in the eighth if it's not him? I guess, or the seventh, because you're going to go Rondon in the eighth, and who's stepping?
Carl Edwards right now is the guy that I would him and Jason Grimm. I think those are the two guys that Justin Grimm have been doing the job consistently.
Yeah, and that's a tough call, because
it is.
I mean, Edwards can find the strike zone, and then he cannot find the strike zone. These things happen. So
Okay, before you go, and I know you got to go do TV. Yeah. Game one around the diamond. Give me your starting lineup. Who's at catcher?
All right. Well, here's the deal. I did this. I did a couple because I did one against right-handers, and I'm assuming that John Lester is going to pitch the first game. I'm just for some reason that's kind of how I did this.
I'm with you.
So against the righties, I've got Fowler in center. I got Bryant at third. I got Rizzo at first. Zobrist in left. Russell at short. Hayward in right. Baez at second. Ross catching. Lester pitching.
Wait a second. So where do you have Zobrist?
I have Zobrist in left field.
In left, okay.
Yeah. I think he can handle that. I think he's good enough out there.
You've got Hayward in right.
Correct. Against lefties, it gets a little different.
Okay.
Against lefties, and this is just my thought. I got Fowler, Bryant, Rizzo, same three, center field, third base, first base. I've got Wilson Contreras batting cleanup in left. I've got Russell at short, Baez at second. I've got Soler in right, Ross catching, and Lester pitching.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah, the thing is Hayward. Hayward's the big right. question mark to me.
Right.
I think he's coming around. I mean, he has the game-tying hit here in this game of the ninth inning. And defensively, forget about what happened today. The guy's a gold glove outfielder. He saved countless runs to earn his keep on this team as far as I'm concerned. But judging by what Soler did in the postseason last year, it's kind of hard not to have him in there against left-handed pitching.
I agree with that.
I know you don't want to base something on a previous year, but that's the one that's going to be tough for me. And again, I'm such a Javi Baez guy right now.
I love Baez.
I just think wherever he plays on the diamond, he makes this team better defensively just with the energy and has the ability to run into one. The other thing that's going to be interesting, and I know you're up against news here, but the thing that I'll find interesting is some of the other guys that are going to be on this playoff roster that aren't on the roster right now, one being Albert Almora. Because defense is at such a premium late in games. I know you've got Matt Caesar on the bench, and you've got LaStella right now as an infield guy that can play some spots on the field.
You think Albert Almora could be on the playoff roster?
I'm just telling you, what he showed these guys when he was up was impressive. It was a tough decision for them to send him down. And I don't know how many outfielders they're going to keep because they have such versatility on this roster that you looked at the roster at one point when Fowler was out, they had three outfielders because everybody else kind of mixed and matched out there. So it's going to be interesting. These are going to be some pretty fun decisions to kind of watch Theo and Jed and Joe Maddon kind of go through as we get closer to playoff time.
You just bonged Matt Caesar.
I didn't bong him. I'm just saying there's options.
There are.
Chris Coughlin is a guy to me that's on the bubble. I don't think he's on the roster.
He can't be on the roster.
I mean, that's just, you need to fill that void of a guy that can, once in a while come off the bench and get you a hit and also save you a run or two in the outfield.
Yeah. Andy, great to be with you today, brother.
Fun time.
Yeah, we'll watch you on Sports Feed tonight and have a great show.
Thanks, bud. Take care.
The Beat. Ground ball, base hit. Tie ball game. Hayward has knocked in both Cubs runs today.
.720 WGN. Want to give something away. We got a Lou Malnati's gift card for you. Very rare opportunity for me to be solo on the show. So what I like to do, and we're going to check in with Kevin Powell real quick out at Wrigley Field, because I think Kevin Powell's going to be stuck at Wrigley all night long covering the game. But 312-981-7200. It's a segment that I like to call Ask Carm Anything. You ask me a question about anything. It can be my personal life, the radio station, outside of my Social Security number and the bank account. I will either A, tell you the answer, or I will say you are a winner. So 312-981-7200. Anything you want to know, could be a political opinion. It could be something. There's a million different ways you can go with it. 312-981-7200. I want you to know me. I want to know you. Let's have a relationship on the radio. A little Ask Carm Anything. 312-981-7200. But before I get to your calls on the Ask Carm, if I don't answer, if you ask me something that I don't want to tell you, if you pick at something that I am uncomfortable with, you get Lou Malnati's pizza. Kevin Powell is somebody that I'm very comfortable with. He's stuck at Wrigley Field covering the Cub game today. It's in the 13th inning. KP, I'm rooting for this to go 22 innings right now. I want full. I'm thinking, the show's over at 6. I'm going to come over and have a hot dog with you.
Yes, I know you're pulling for that. I am standing in the concourse watching one of the TVs that they have hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah.
Because the TV in the media room downstairs is broken. So I'm just standing I'm standing among the people, the fellow Cubs fans out here. And, yeah, really, really excited about this 13-inning game, Carm.
Well, so you've made a fundamental error, Kevin. Why would you go down to the media room with all the media jamokes when you could just stand up in the press box and enjoy the ball game from there?
Because normally I will leave. The Cubs were trailing 2-1 in the ninth, so if the Cubs were to just went 3-up, 3-down in the bottom of the ninth, and then I tried to walk from the press box down to the media room,
you would have made it.
Then I'm fighting all the fans and there's traffic. So I try to just beat all the traffic down the ramps and whatnot, get to the media room, post up, wait for Joe Maddon and company to arrive. But that wasn't the case today. And now I just haven't really felt like walking all the way back up to the press box.
Right. Well, you know, my other recommendation would be, you know, it's okay for you to just discreetly move into some seating venue over there and just, you know, you're allowed to.
Yeah, I was thinking about that because fans are filing out. I don't know. I would say maybe it's 75% capacity, but after the bottom of the 12th, a lot of people were heading out to enjoy the rest of their Labor Day weekend. But I'm here for the appeal. You think I should just leave, Carm? How do you think everybody at the station would feel about that?
Well, I know that's on your mind. I can't make that decision for you. I mean, sometimes pride in your job is important. But, you know, I understand that people have things to do. There's, you know, Polish Fest and stuff like that out there in the city right now that people might want to attend.
Kielbasa's not going to eat itself, Carm. I need to get over to Taste of Polonia. Take down some pierogies, maybe a potato pancake, get some smoked kielbasa, maybe a cold beer. But instead, I'm standing on the concourse at Wrigley.
I don't see you.
With the rest of the fans.
I don't see you as a taste of a Polish guy, Kevin. This is a big move for you. Where's this motivation coming from?
I'm nearly 100% Polish, Carm.
I am all
about Taste of Polonia. Yeah, my family's Polish.
I did not know that. That's a learn for me. You should share more about your family heritage when we're hanging out. That's my bet.
If you ask, I will let you know. But yeah, we've gone to Taste of Polonia a few years now, so it's always a good time. But I don't know, man. I'm running out of time here. Close to 10. I'm not going to get out of Wrigley for a while. Who knows when this will end?
Well, maybe I'll tag you out, although I have my own dinner plan, so I'm actually not going to do that, and I apologize. So you are on your own.
Can you ask Dave if I can leave and then let me know what he says?
Sure.
Just see how that goes.
No problem. Any news that you'd like to make us aware of being at the ballpark all day?
Let's see here. Observations from the game or for the Cubs? What are you looking for here?
It could be absolutely nothing. I just want to give you an opportunity to.
Well, Jason Heyward continues to hit, and if he gets hot and stays hot, especially leading up to the postseason, that's like adding another player to your roster for the postseason. You know what I mean? Because they basically just said, okay, just stay out there because the offense is going to carry your slump anyway. It's not like there's been a whole lot of damage from him not playing well. So when you throw Heyward in hitting the ball, that's like bringing in a free agent or trading for someone late in the season because you're getting production that you hadn't gotten all season from him. So if he continues to do that, this offense becomes even more powerful.
Great way to look at it. Kevin, I'll be on the show for another 20 minutes. So if you want to check back in and get support, we're here for you.
Can I stay on the phone with you? Because I was kind of bored to stand on the concourse.
You want to be on? You want to stay on? You want to be on for Ask Carm?
I'll let Ask Carm anything. Well, yeah. I'll try to think of a. I'll let you go. I'm sure the phone lines are flooded right now, trying to ask Carm stuff. So I'll let you go, and I'll let you know when this Cubs game's over. All right.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thanks, KP.
Godspeed.
All right, Kevin. Bye. Powell stuck at the Cubs game, wanting to go to Taste of Poland, which is in my neighborhood, by the way. I didn't invite me. I would have gone. No invite. Standard. 312-981-7200. Ask Carm anything. You ask me a question, I will answer it. Try to keep it like moderately clean, but, you know, that's part of the game. Cindy, trying to get some Lou Malnati's. You are our first contestant in Ask Carm Anything. How are you? Cindy?
Oh, I'm the first one? Oh, awesome. Okay.
Yes, Cindy.
I'm leading off, Cindy. All right.
What do you got?
So it has to be an uncomfortable question.
Well, it doesn't have to be. It can be completely comfortable. I love comfortable questions.
But it has to be in order to get to win, it has to be an uncomfortable question.
Well, I mean, I'm probably going to answer anything that you ask me. I don't tend to lose this game, Cindy, but if there's a couple ways that perhaps you could win.
Okay. Well, can I ask you a qualifying question first before the uncomfortable question?
Dan Long, you're the official rules judge. I've never had this question. A qualifying question? I don't know what that means.
Are you married? Are you married?
Cindy. Cindy, we have to establish our relationship a lot further. I have talked about my lonely single life ad nauseum on the station.
I'm so sorry that I'm not aware of that.
Yeah, no, okay, we got to get. Well, that's on me, Cindy. I have to attract you to 720 WGN between 3 and 7 on Saturdays and 3 and 6 on Sundays more. So we're gonna have to build that rapport. Okay, so now you know that. What else would you like to know?
So do you go on online dating sites? You do that?
Yes. Very much so. You want to now? Normally, this is one question. We're at 3 now, Cindy. So this is your third and final. Go ahead. Yep.
Have you been caught in a lie on a dating website?
No, I don't. Cindy, I really appreciate the phone call. Please. Please call again. I caught in a lie. No, that hasn't happened. Not through like the online dating.
Did you say caught in a lie on a dating website? Have you ever been, or have you caught somebody?
I don't think I've ever caught anyone that way either. Like everybody who's dating nowadays is online dating. Like that's just generally the way it goes. As far as the online dating world goes, I much prefer a setup than doing it that way, because then you have somebody is kind of vetted. But online dating is working out right now for me. I have no complaints. Thank you very much. Brent, you're on 720 WGN. Go ahead, Brent.
Yes, I'm calling from Central Illinois down in Lake Shelbyville.
All right, Brent.
Yeah. Just a political question. Who are you going to vote for in the election?
I'm voting for Hillary, and if I could vote for her 10 times, I would do it, Brent, all day. So Yep. Appreciate you, Brent. Thank you.
Okay.
And I'm not in love with Hillary, but I am anti-love of the other candidate. The Don. Donna, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. Go ahead, Donna.
Hi. I like to know a little on the inside story. Like years ago, back in the day, Wade Boggs was involved with other players' wives, and there was wife swapping and everything. And supposedly Patrick Sharp was traded because he had been fooling around with a couple of the wives. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to know, do we have any dirt on any of the Cubs?
Ooh, Cubs dirt.
I'll go with the Sox.
I see. Okay. Donna, I really don't. But I find it interesting is if I play just complete clown listening to the walk-up songs. When Anthony Rizzo comes to the plate.
He is good looking.
He is, isn't he?
He
plays Bad Blood. Now we've got Bad Blood. And I have no knowledge of anything. I promise you, I would never lie to you, Donna. But I do wonder, like, what's that about? Is he just a big Taylor fan, or is there something going on? And Dan
and
Long.
You hear any gossip of that? Nothing like that, huh?
Gossip. No, not on this team. Not on this team. Yeah, but thank you, Donna.
Thank you.
That's a good angle. I like the angle there, because if I did have good gossip, I wouldn't want to burn a relationship. That's a way you could win Lou Malnati's pizza. She's a solid angle by Donna, but I really just don't. It's hard to get that type of info nowadays. Maybe KP can get in the clubhouse and find something out today. 312-981-7200. Ask Carm anything. You ask me a question, I don't know the answer, or won't tell you the answer more accurately. That's how the game plays. Then you win Lou Malnati's pizza. Duke, you're on 720 WGN. Go ahead, Duke.
How you doing?
I'm good, Duke. How are you?
I can't complain.
There you go,
Duke.
What
I'm wondering is, what do you think about grown men collecting and playing with toy trains?
What do I think about Duke, do you do this yourself?
Yes.
So you have a train collection in your basement?
In my apartment, yes.
In your apartment. You have a one-floor apartment
And you've got a train in what, the dining room? Cubs just won on a walk-off. Anthony Rizzo scores. Jason Hayward, the game winner. 3-2, Cubs win. 3-2, Cubs win. Back to 40 games over 500. Big day for Jason Hayward. Okay, Duke. So are you a single man or are you a married man?
I'm divorced.
Divorced.
I'm 76 years old.
So you're 76 years old and you got a train in the middle of your apartment.
Yes, in my second bedroom.
In your second, Duke, I think that's cool. I think that's awesome. You obviously love trains. Were you an engineer once, or are you just like a collector of type of things? What we got going on?
I'm an engineer, but not I'm an electronic engineer, or was.
Okay.
And I just love toy trains and scale model trains.
Are people giving you a hard time on this?
No.
Okay.
Normally, I just associate with people who are involved in the same thing I am.
Okay. Okay. Well, you know, I don't have that myself, Duke, so I don't know about us building that type of bond, but I do love trains. Going back to the child years, I used to, you know, love to ride on the train with my dad or something, going down into the city, yes, have a little lunch. So I appreciate your train love, Duke.
Thank you, sir.
You got it, my friend. No
have
problem.
A good day.
You too. All right, that was a little off the beaten path right there. I really would love to take a train trip across the country, like head on out to, like do a jaunt out to Colorado or something, a little overnight Amtrak. Dan Long, you want to come with me?
Yeah, sounds good, man.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate that. 312-981-7200. Tyler, ask Carm anything. You ask me something, I won't answer it, and you get Lou Malnati's pizza. What's up, Tyler?
What's up, man? How's it going?
I'm doing great, Tyler. Good to have you on the program.
Thank you. All right, I got one for you.
Okay.
Briefs, boxers, or thong?
Briefs, boxers, or thong? Is that what you asked?
Yeah.
For myself?
Yeah.
I'm for
people. I don't know.
I got you, Tyler. I got you. I appreciate the phone call. I'm a boxer brief guy all day. I think a boxer is just way too loose. It doesn't get the job done at all. I don't understand that move at all. I like the comfort of a boxer brief. I think that's an easy choice. I don't understand how there's any other decision out there. Dan Long, you with me?
No, I'm a traditional boxer guy.
Traditional boxer?
I need the freedom.
Okay, well, good for you. Congratulations on that. I don't get that look.
Okay, I should say I prefer the freedom, maybe not either.
Hey, any way you play it. 312-981-7200. Ask Carm anything. You ask me something, I won't answer. You get Lou Malnati's pizza. Put your radio down there, Dave. Turn the radio down.
As instructed previously.
I'm sure you did your job, Dan Long. I 100% believe in your thoroughness. Let's see if he does. Let's see. Dave, we'll give you one more shot at that. Dave?
Is this Mark?
It is Dave. Go ahead, man.
Hey, I'm pretty good. How are you doing here? So I got an issue. This is Tim from Wisconsin. So here's the thing.
Okay.
If you had a choice between Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers or Michael Jordan, why would you pick Rodgers and Favre over Jordan?
Why would I?
Why would you? It's a foregone conclusion that Favre plus Rodgers are better than Jordan.
Okay,
so,
Dave, yeah. you're a misguided soul, Dave. Michael Jordan's the greatest athlete to ever play anything. We all know this. You would, of course, take 23 over Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, or anybody else who's ever played anything. This is not a conversation. This is in the Ten Commandments passed down by Moses, Dave.
I'm with you there, but we all know that Jordan never won a championship until he got Pippen there. So I'm thinking, you know, Favre and Rodgers, they never had that kind of support. So, you know, it's hard to – I was talking to my wife here, Carrie Daly, about this issue.
Yeah.
And she said the same thing. She said the same thing here, Carmen, that, listen, your thing with Jordan, you know, it's a little bit big and stuff like that, and you got to come back to earth with it. Okay?
Yeah, well, you know, Carrie's a very opinionated person. I know Carrie from my college days at the University of Iowa. And, Tim, I love that you called in as Dave, and I appreciate everything that's going on here. Whenever you guys want to have me over for dinner, I'm in. Just let it be known. I'm waiting for an invite. Tell Care Bear I say hello. And listen. I appreciate, thanks Tim/Dave. Green Bay Packer fans, you're great fans. You're beautiful people. And there are some Packer fans out there that would say something as ludicrous as what was just brought to the airwaves with Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. But it's always a good opportunity just to praise Michael Jeffrey Jordan as the greatest player to play anything. It makes me feel good just to say it. I feel better right now, right? We're getting a thumbs up outside the studio here. That's what I'm talking about, wearing the Illinois shirt. Big win for your Illini yesterday, 52-3. Lovie Smith making the change out in Champaign. All right. I didn't have to give anything away here. We got one more, Dan. We'll do one more. Okay, fine. Get Mitch in here. Mitch, what do you got?
Carm, what's up, buddy?
Hey, Mitch. Oh, you're my guy. It's Mitch.
Yeah.
It's my nemesis. Hi. My text nemesis and Twitter nemesis. What's up, Mitch? What do you got?
Answer this question, buddy.
Okay.
Who is your favorite co-host, Adam Hoag or Jared Payton?
My favorite co-host. Well, I'm going to have to say Adam Hoag there. You know, he Mitch, I love you.
I love you too, buddy.
Adam is, I hired Adam as an intern. I've known him since for 10 plus years right now. I love JP. He's my guy. But if you had, we're at blood war here and I got to go between JP and Hoagie. I mean, Hoagie and I have been through, we've been through more wars. That's just the bottom line. So I gotta love my guy Hoagie. Love JP too. And everybody else I've ever worked with on the station. Do you think that I just got to, think I just lost a friend there? JP understands, and JP's out of town. He's not listening, so I feel comfortable. All right, quick timeout. Brian Noonan coming up at 6. We'll talk to Brian, see what he's got cooking for his show, 720 WGN.